Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. We have three appeals to hear this morning. We've read your briefs, the authority cited in your briefs, and at least portions of the record. So we're familiar with your cases. We're probably going to have some questions this morning. Be mindful of the clock when it expires. It is time to end your argument. But if you're answering a question from the court, you should feel free to finish your answer, but do be mindful of the clock. If you have rebuttal time, you won't be eating into that time if you're answering a question from the court. Our first case is Aguilera-Fernandez versus the Attorney General. Ms. Kunkel, will you speak with us, please?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors, and good morning. May it please the court. My name is Maddie Kunkel, and I'm here today representing Mr. Denis Aguilera-Fernandez, who seeks asylum and withholding of removal. The IJ found Denis's testimony to be thoroughly credible, and that his prior mistreatment was, quote, severe and regrettable. Yet the IJ and later the BIA denied that Denis had been previously persecuted and said that he had no objective fear of future persecution. This court should reverse for two reasons. First, the Cuban police beat and detained Denis 7 to 10 times over a 2-year period to stop him from exercising a fundamental right. This qualifies as past persecution. And second, nothing in the record indicates that Denis would be treated differently if forced to return to Cuba. When Denis was 23 years old, the Cuban police beat and detained him for 24 hours after he spoke out against government repression. For the next 2 years, the government monitored his activities, interrogated his friends, and would detain him on dates of national importance to stop his political protest. Each time they detained him.
Kunkel, I guess the problem I have with this is we have a standard of review of substantial evidence, and that would require us to hold that the board, that its finding that this mistreatment did not rise to the extreme level of persecution was so wrong that no reasonable fact finder could have made that finding, in essence, that even though we have to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, that the record would compel a finding of persecution. And I guess my concern is when the several detentions and beatings occurred, none of the detentions was ever for more than a day. It was over a 2-year period. So we're talking about maybe 3 or 4 times a year. And he never suffered an injury of any kind, never a cut, a scrape, a bruise, even medical treatment. And at what point do we say that it necessarily crosses the line of persecution to where the record would compel that finding?
Your Honor, if I may first on the standard of review issue, Denis maintains that this court should review this case de novo as he was found credible by the IJ, and this court's prior ruling in Mejia says that once a positive credibility finding has been made, the universe of facts is now undisputed. Thus, all this reviewing court is doing is applying undisputed facts to a legal standard, which it would under review be typically reviewed under de novo. So we would maintain that the proper standard of review here is de novo review. On the issue of severity, the standard here is that the conduct must be severe, as Your Honor mentioned. Here, we maintain that the cumulative impact, which this court has looked to in the past of Denis's mistreatment, is severe, as he was beaten and detained numerous times over a 2-year period. The fact that he did not suffer detectable physical injuries, this court has said, is not determinative for the issue of past persecution, as was held in Sanchez Jimenez. And here, the cumulative impact, the continuousness, the the number of times, the fact that he was detained on dates of national importance and thus was inhibiting a fundamental right, all point to the fact that this was indeed a severe previous mistreatment. In total, when the 7 to 10 instances are added together over this 2-year period, the Cuban government detained Denise for 7 days. And each time upon those detentions, he also did suffer physical mistreatment. The police did beat him. So as this court has held, the cumulative impact is considered.
At what point would we say that it's harassment? So even severe harassment, but falls short of persecution. Doesn't a fact finder really get to make that determination? Is it that,
Your Honor?
Essentially, at the end of the day, still a question of fact.
Your Honor, the question of what rises to the level of persecution would be a legal standard, as the what is persecution is defined.
Define the legal rule where we would say it's crossed at this point? I mean, if it's a legal rule, it's got to be something administrable that we're going to apply in future cases where a fact finder would know, well, that the rule's been crossed here versus in another situation.
I understand Your Honor's point that this is a highly fact-intensive inquiry into what rises to the level of being severe for past persecution. The review question here, though, does not go into whether or not the facts as they stand in the record should be reconsidered. The facts stand as they are. And so all that this court is doing is applying those undisputed facts to the legal standard of what qualifies as severe past mistreatment. And this court looks to its precedents in determining what rises to the level of severity in the past. And this court has held the cumulative impact of even minor instances by non-government actors, such as in the Delgado case.
Well, let's look at it this way. Then if I certainly understand your point that we don't have competing versions of what happened. There's no dispute about what happened to your client. But if the question is, this is simply a legal question, how would we define persecution in a way that future panels would know that it was necessary, the line was necessarily crossed?
Your Honor, the standard here, it does account for the facts and circumstances of each particular case. And here, Denise's mistreatment is well over the line that this court has found in previous cases.
Where's the line?
The line, Your Honor, under the law is whether or not the conduct is severe or not. And this court has held in prior cases that with less severe, less cumulative misconduct by non-government actors was past persecution, such as in the Delgado case with non-government actors and in the Xi case with government actors, and Xi as well, including the exercise of a fundamental right, as also present here. Denise's mistreatment, the fact that it occurred over a longer period of time, a 2-year period, included numerous instances of mistreatment by the government itself, indicates that this is well over that line of severity that this court must apply. Now, the government's own training manual that guides asylum decisions also supports this court's precedence in my argument here today that multiple instances in the past of past mistreatment can be accounted for in determining whether or not past persecution occurred. Moreover, the manual says that even minor beatings by government officials due to a protected characteristic can rise to the level of persecution for asylum. That means that they rise above the standard of harassment and do meet that severity standard.
Counsel, isn't the standard whether the BIA's determination or the IJ's determination, either one, that the petitioner was not eligible for asylum, isn't the question for us whether that determination was manifestly contrary to law?
Your Honor, under a substantial evidence standard, that would be the standard, but we maintain that this court ought to review Denise's case de novo as there is
What does the statute say?
Your Honor, the statute leaves matters of law under de novo, or the regulations, I should say, leave the...
putting the regulations aside, doesn't 1252B4C say a decision that an alien is not eligible for admission to the United States is conclusive unless manifestly contrary to law?
Your Honor, perhaps for the IJ and the BIA's review, the IJ's determination, but the reviewing court under the regulations here is able to review matters of law under a de novo standard and matters of fact under a substantial evidence standard, which the BIA did in this case by applying that regulation, that matters of law.
Is that your position, or is it your position that admission to the United States is different from asylum?
That too as well, Your Honor. The determination of whether or not past persecution has occurred is a different question than being solely admitted into the United States.
I thought that might be your position.
So, Your Honor, the BIA was also wrong to find that Denise did not have a fear of future persecution, as nothing in the record indicates that Denise would be treated differently if forced to return to Cuba. The BIA's
Am I correct that your inference of future persecution rests entirely on the past persecution that he suffered, if it rises to that level?
Your Honor, we do maintain that he did suffer past persecution, thus would be entitled to the presumption of future persecution. However, even if this court were to find that no past persecution had occurred, we argue that Denise would have an objective fear of future persecution.
But the evidence for that would really be all the evidence that about what he's already suffered, right?
Your Honor, that and the fact that there's no evidence that the Cuban government wouldn't escalate his mistreatment moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Conkle. You've saved 4 minutes for rebuttal. So we'll hear from the government. Ms. Aldana.
Yes, thank you, Your Honors, and good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Aldana. On behalf of the Attorney General of the United States, the government asked the court to deny the petition for review for two reasons. First, being that the petitioner failed to establish that his harm rose to the requisite level of persecution. And second, being that he failed to establish an objectively reasonable fear of future persecution. This court's precedent sets a high threshold for mistreatment to constitute persecution. And here, substantial evidence supports the agency's finding that the petitioner did not suffer the type of severe or sufficiently extreme mistreatment to establish persecution.
The BIA counsel treated the past persecution determination is a question of law, didn't it?
It did, Your Honor, and it's standard of review. However, the board does not dictate this court's standard of review. And this court has a well-established case law employing substantial evidence tests to past persecution determinations, even when there is a positive credibility determination. And that can be found in this court's decision in Islam, Zhang, de Santa Maria, Sanchez Jimenez, and even this court in Xi viewed petitioner's testimony as true, and nonetheless employed the substantial evidence test.
My point, that was a premise of it, is that the BIA at least recognized, which has considerable expertise in this area to say the least, past persecution determination as a question of law, and future persecution as a question of fact. There's a rational basis for that distinction, isn't there?
Well, Your Honor, I guess what the board was doing in that case was just, as I mentioned, determining its standard of review.
I understand that, but it made a distinction in its standard of review from past persecution, which it reviewed the IJ's determinations as a question of law, de novo to the board, as opposed to future persecution, which is more of a predictive fact standard, which it said was clear error. Right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. However, this court's standard of review would be different in this case, because this court has indicated that the fact finder must determine cumulatively whether or not the harm rises to the level of persecution. In this case, the agency is the fact finder, which this court has also has held in Silva that the agency is the proper fact finder in this case. So we would ask the court.
what is our standard on reasonable fear of future persecution?
The standard is that the record must compel a finding that there was that the harm rose to the level of persecution.
So we make no distinction. There's a dissonance or a difference at the very least between the BIA's treatment of those two questions and our treatment.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Of course, at the end of the day, Ms. Aldana, if I understand this right, really the board is only making one determination, and that is whether the petitioner has a well-founded fear of future persecution. And you can prove that in two different ways. One is you can prove that you have suffered past persecution that would create a presumption of the predictive factual question that you will suffer, that you have a well-founded fear of future persecution. And the other is that you have other facts that have nothing to do with what's happened to you in the past in terms of persecution that would give rise to a well-founded fear of future persecution. Perhaps there's been a regime change and I guess, you know, from the time of the Shah to the Ayatollah in Iran, you know, someone who was not Muslim and who was being returned to Iran would have been able to say, well, no, I didn't suffer past persecution under the Shah, but I've got that fear under the Ayatollah. But at the end of the day, it's really one question, right?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, it would be just the board determining whether or not there was a reasonable possibility that the petitioner would face future persecution. And in this case, the record does not compel that he will, especially in light of the fact that he never had criminal charges, an arrest warrant, was able to leave the country without incident, and his family remains in Cuba unharmed.
Their argument is the reason he was able to leave the country is not that he was coming to the United States directly, but went through another country. And that if the government had known that he was coming to the United States, things might have been entirely different. Right.
Yes, Your Honor. However, based on the country report which the petitioner provided, the Cuban government often uses arbitrary reasons to deny permission for any travel for political activists. So if the government viewed the petitioner as such an activist, then he would have been denied, or he could have been denied permission to travel regardless if he was going to the United States or not.
Ms. Aldana, in the cases that you compare Mr. Fernandez's case to, like Zhang, Kazem Zadeh and John Doe, there was just one brief detention. And here there were multiple detentions over the course of 2 years. And also what the IJ characterized as physical violence. I didn't see in the record any indication that these beatings were going to stop. So doesn't that pattern distinguish this case from those cases that you compare it to?
Well, Your Honor, if I could refer Your Honor to the case in to this court's case in Xi, which the petitioner heavily relies upon, in that situation, the petitioner was detained for a consecutive week, so it was multiple detentions, and he was forced to sleep outside in the rain overnight while being tied to a hitching post, tied to an iron rod.
Wait, do you agree with me that this case really isn't like Zhang and John Doe and Kazem Zadeh? I can never say that one.
Well, no, Your Honor. I would say that even within Zhang and the Janda, there was more severe treatment than in this case. Because in this case, there was no the beatings that he suffered, while of course terrible, and not to diminish his experiences in any way. However, they never amounted to bruises or marks or required medical treatment.
Let's take the conduct that Mr. Fernandez was subjected to, repeated detention and physical violence. Is there some point at which it becomes too much? What if this happened, you know, once a month or two times a month? At that point, would you say that it does amount to past persecution?
Well, Your Honor, I would base it on this court's precedent. And I would say, if we look to this court's precedent in Chi, which was multiple detentions, also an infringement of rights, but it was a complete infringement of rights, then I would say that the the treatment would not compare, and it doesn't rise to the same extreme nature that it was in Xi. Within Xi, this court compared it to the cruel and unusual punishment of being tied to the hitching post, which the Supreme Court addressed in Holt v. Peltzer. So there's a clear distinction between the treatments of the two cases.
I don't think you've really answered my question, though. At what point would this very conduct become too much? What if he was detained once a week, two times a month, or over a period of 5 years, let's say?
I would say it would become too much when the record compels it. I could not identify a single, I don't think it has a magic number. I think
would you agree with me? You seem to be focusing on the physical violence element. Would you agree with me that this behavior was some element of physical violence, but no broken bones, say, no evidence of soft tissue injury? Would it be sufficient if this conduct happened frequently enough, even without that evidence of injury?
I would have to say, Your Honor, that it would be based on the cumulative effect of everything. I could not say.
Saying that it could be, that at some point.
I'm saying that a reasonable.
Detentions could become too frequent and too long, and the beatings too frequent and too long to where it would.
A reasonable adjudicator could make that conclusion. However, in this case, the record that we have before us with the detentions, the amount of detentions he's had and the treatment that he experienced, again, while not diminishing his experiences, it's insufficient to amount to persecution with the record before us.
Let me ask you this, counsel. Suppose it continues at the existing rate. What's passed is prologue. He goes back in Cuba, return to Cuba, and every Castro type holiday or some kind of holiday where they pick him up and do this, they continue at a rate of 10 times, 7 to 10 times every 2 years. He's 29, I think now, 29 or 30. Let's say he's got a life expectancy, if the beatings don't shorten it, of another 40 years. So if he's going to be subjected to this 3.5 to 5 times a year for the next 40 years, is that persecution?
Well, Your Honor, I would not want to speculate on that. And that would be.
But I want you to speculate on it. Is that frequent enough over a long enough period of time to amount to persecution?
That would be based on what the agency would determine is sufficient. That would be up to the fact finder.
If some fact finder said it's stipulated here and I find as a fact that this is going to happen at the same rate for the next 40 years, but I don't think that's enough to be persecution, we would affirm? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, no, you're not. Well, Your Honor, what you're referring to is future persecution.
Yep.
So in that case, there would have to be something within the record that would be singling out the petitioner, indicating that he would be facing this type of treatment.
No, there wasn't. In my hypothetical, all there'd have to be is a stipulation. There's a stipulation. Cuban government comes in and says, we don't usually get involved in these things, but that's exactly what we plan to do. And we'll make sure it's done until he leaves this earth. So you've got a finding. Say the IJ just finds it. Yeah, I think this is going to continue. 40 years, 3.5 to 5 times a year. But I think under the standard of persecution, as I understand it from the 11th Circuit and elsewhere, that's not enough. Under our evidence standard of review, is that due to be reversed or not? Vacated, I'm sorry.
One could determine that a reasonable adjudicator could find that that would be compelling, or however, in this though, again, Your Honor, those are not.
No, that's not the standard you're asking us to apply. Could a reasonable adjudicator find that that was not persecution? Is the standard you're asking us to apply, as I understand, isn't it?
Would a reasonable adjudicator be compelled to make a finding of persecution?
Right.
And so you're asking?
Yep. Would it be?
Would it be persecution if?
No, not would it be.
Would a reasonable fact finder be compelled to find that it is?
If they stipulated on the fact that he would be harmed for 40 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same rate. Same blows. They've got it in videotape. They train the new people. Be sure you don't vary. 40 years, 3.5 to 5 times a year.
I could not make that conclusion for you, Your Honor. I don't think it's because those aren't the facts of this case.
No. Counsel. You've been to law school. Function of a hypothetical. Don't fight the hypothetical. Court does not allow people to wiggle out from hypotheticals. Now, that's the hypothetical. You are the government attorney. You're determining whether there is a credible argument that can get past a court of appeals. You tell us the answer.
I would say pursuant to this court's precedent that it would not be severe enough to compel a conclusion.
Thank you.
All right. If there are no further questions, the government asks the court to deny the petition for review.
Okay, Ms. Aldana, we appreciate your argument. Ms. Kunkel, you've reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honor, once again, on the standard of review question, we ask that this court review the question of past persecution in this case under de novo review, as this court's precedent in Mejia compels that once a positive credibility finding has been made, that the proper standard to review the past persecution question is de novo. And under de novo review, Denise's past mistreatment does rise to the level of severity to meet the past persecution standard. In these prior cases, the government relies on there was one detention and no, there was one detention in one instance where the government or even the non-government actors acted against the asylee. She here, Your Honors, is directly on point as
I'm not sure that's right, that all those cases involved one detention. I mean, she mentioned several precedents, Silva, John Doe, Kazemzadar. I mean, Kazemzadar, my memory of that is that was an Iranian Christian who would have had to practice his faith underground, and where he is a former Muslim, and in Iran, apostasy is punishable by death. I'm not sure that you're right about the standard.
Your Honor, in that specific case, the specific mistreatment against the asylee was one instance of a 4-day detention. Here, Denise suffered a cumulative.
Dejanda.
Oh, Dejanda. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thought you were talking about Kazemsa. Dejanda, Your Honor.
Yeah, well, my memory of Kazemsa is he had a future persecution based on religion, but not a past persecution based on political opinion.
Yes, Your Honor. So in Dejanda, that was again a one instance of a detention that lasted 36 hours. However, here, Your Honor, Denise
suffered injuries, right?
Sure, Your Honor. And Denise also suffered physical mistreatment that just did not culminate in physical.
But did we say the record compelled a finding of persecution in Dejanda?
No, Your Honor. There was no persecution finding in that case. But here, Your Honor, the cumulative impact and the IJ's own determination that Denise's past mistreatment was, quote, severe and regrettable, indicates that it does rise to the level of past persecution when considered cumulatively. The government's own training manual that guides its asylum decisions, again, indicates that multiple detentions in multiple instances, especially with government actors, can rise to the level of past persecution and for the grant of asylum. This was Denise's mistreatment over the 2-year period after being inhibited from exercising a fundamental right was over the line of severity. His past mistreatment rises to the level of previous persecution as he was continuously detained and beaten by his government for 2 years, merely because he spoke out against government repression and corruption. And he reasonably fears that this mistreatment would only continue if forced to return to Cuba. This entitles to Denise to asylum under this law. Therefore,
so isn't it more accurate to say he was regularly detained and beaten as opposed to continuously? He wasn't detained for 2 years.
Sure, Your Honor, I understand the distinction. Yes, he was not held in confinement for 2 years. He was detained multiple times over a 2-year period. So thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Conkle, thank you. And the court knows that you were, you're a law student who's practicing under supervision of a member of this bar. And you did a really nice job this morning and helped us with this case. Of course, we always appreciate the argument of the government as well. But nice job, Ms. Conkle. Thank you.
Thank you.